Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to our podcast this morning here in Chicago, Illinois. In this podcast, we have the honor and privilege of interviewing Ms. Dasha Duckworth, the founder, and Robert Davies, the chief executive officer of a large cybersecurity firm called the Stealth ISS Group. They are located out in Arlington, Virginia. Dasha and Robert, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Well, good morning, Ravi. Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone on who's listening in.
Good morning, Sim here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Well, to get started with, we kind of did some background snooping on you. You know, we didn't do any background checks or anything, but we looked up your bio on LinkedIn, you know, on your website and did some Google search, and you both seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you give us some of the, can you give us a synopsis of your career and how you got started in cybersecurity?
Oh, I'll take that one to start. So I've been in technology for, over 30 years, and I've always been, the projects that I've worked always had what used to be called IT security, right? Somebody put a cyber in front of it and added a zero to the check. So I've always been on the kind of assessment and audit side. I joined Dasha about 6 years ago. Because she started this fabulous security company back in 2002. So I'll let her speak to the next bit.
So I've kind of got into it more or less by accident. I was a geek from, early 80s when I had my first computer, and eventually ended up in college, and I was doing international relations, foreign affairs, and national security. And I spent a lot of evenings in the computer lab just doing stuff and things that I may not, should have not done. But a couple of times I realized, you know what, I have access to computers that I should not have access to with quite interesting information. So in that case, I realized, well, we got to do something about it. So that was early 90s before even cybersecurity came about. And that's when I got into it. So not really IT background, but started out with some network and some assessments, and then went into ISO. And then from there, it was just everything all together combined. And then a couple of years or a few years later, just before 9/11, I started Stealth or co-started Stealth. And that's when we said, okay, we're going to focus solely on cybersecurity, predominantly because of national security, and then the commercial part came into it. So that's kind of it, and that's why we're passionate about what we do.
Excellent. It sounds wonderful. Now, since you started Stealth ISS, what does the ISS stand for, actually? Now, is it your website? That kind of piqued my curiosity. Could you explain to our audience what that acronym stands for?
Sure. So Stealth is obviously because of the stealth part. You got to be stealthy in the cyber field. And ISS is the acronym for what the company initially started out with, which was Stealth International Security Service. Because our clients were international. So we had Europe, we had NATO projects, and that was our strap line. We didn't want to focus just on one geography because internet and technology is interconnected. So ISS.
Excellent. I love that name. Now, I think you said you started in 2003, so you've been in business for, 17 years, 18 years now almost?
Yep, 2002, so 18 years, going strong.
Okay, how's business? Okay, cool. Okay. Now, do you have does Stealth ISS have a presence in other countries as well? Are you just based in the U.S. and the U.K., or do you have offices worldwide? Do you have a worldwide reach?
Yeah, we have our head office is in Arlington, Virginia. We had an office down in Huntsville, Alabama for a while to cover off our federal practice, but COVID-19 kind of forced us to evaluate that, and it seems all of our guys in corporate prefer to work from home, so we closed that office. We have an office in London. We have an office in Slovakia to cover off the whole Brexit thing. And we have a representation in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, because we both spent a fair amount of time in region, and our network is pretty strong out there.
What kind of projects do you have out of the UAE or in the Middle East, if I can ask, please?
So, we're a service company. So we don't have products per se. We partnered with companies that have products, and we are integrating those for the clients. We're integrating those into our managed services. But the services that we have in the Middle East is pretty much the same that we have in the U.S. or in Europe. It's about data privacy. It's about healthcare protection. It's about secure communication. It's about threat management, threat analysis. So the same thing, I mean, they have the same industries. They got critical infrastructure. So we've done a lot on the financial side for bankings. We've done a lot on national security and border protection control, monitoring, license plate, facial recognition, and the standards, you know, implementation of NIST standards, best practice security. And especially as Middle East grows and they're integrating a lot of new features into their country. Like, for example, everything works predominantly on technology. Mm-hmm. So you want to book a cab, you want to pay your utility bill, you want to whatever. It's all done via text, via SMS, and online. So they're pretty much, I would say, decades ahead of what the U.S. could do. And that just changed recently. So they're changing things, and that's where a lot of stuff for us comes in.
Now, who is your typical customer base that you're trying to target? Obviously, you have a wide, you know, reach overseas, international markets. Do you typically target the SMBs or larger enterprise companies, or perhaps a mixture of both?
Yeah, it's a mixture of everything, really. So, you know, the nature of our industry dictates, you know, we've signed so many NDAs, we can't give out client names. I can give a couple of examples that were public domain, but, you know, we have a sweet spot around finance, financial services. We tend to go for the kind of medium-sized businesses upwards. And we target, or we like to partner with IT service providers. They love us because we add a dimension to their value proposition to their clients. So we're quite focused on that area too.
And also one thing, especially being in the federal sector and DoD space, we also are getting more and more traction also from the small and medium-sized businesses, just because of the DoD having put out requirements about CMMC, which requires every defense contractor now to have stringent security in place and be audited by a third party. So we're seeing more and more of those companies coming to us and asking us for consulting services, managed services, remediation, you name it, because they need to get to that stage.
And lastly, we also have a thriving federal practice. So we do work for, especially in the U.S., Dasha mentioned we have worked on NATO contracts in the past. But right now we've got some active contracts with DOD and a couple of agencies up in D.C. And we include some state and local projects in that particular business line for us as well.
Okay. We'll get more into CMMC later on in the show, but do you have any customer success stories that you'd like to share with us? Any client testimonials that you can, you know, divulge out without giving any confidential information out?
Yeah, there was a particularly memorable incident. There's an organization that hosts a summer sporting event every 4 years and a winter one as well. Well, recently at the most recent winter event, there was a publicly this is public domain. So there was an attack on the game's infrastructure, and we had designed and built the security operations center for the broadcast services component of the event. So that was perfectly fine because we built it, but it was the game's infrastructure SOC that was compromised, along with a load of the malware was just eradicating critical infrastructure, you know, timing systems and athlete systems and such. So outside of our own contract, we actually dived in. We found the malware and the hash. We found a safe restore point so that all of these all of this infrastructure could be brought back online, and then worked with various agencies, law enforcement agencies, following chain of custody to determine what happened and who did it.
Okay. Are there any more stories you'd like to share with us?
I think that's probably the only public domain one that we are able to share without naming too many names. I think Dasha might have one.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not going to disclose any names or nothing, but it is, I mean, we do 24/7 monitoring for our clients, especially on the infrastructure. And our clients, they are, you know, anything from banking, finances, all the way to defense contractors. So it's interesting to see what all is happening in the world, companies that get compromised, and identifying really what the cause is. And I would say, honestly, 90% of the causes are really just the basic security that you expect, especially from the big companies, that they have it already in place. So it is scary to see what all is happening there. It is scary to see that we all are impacted, but it's also a little bit frustrating to see where you'd expect today in 2020, with cyber being around, companies would be a little bit more secure, especially on the basic side, because it's not magic. It's nothing special. It might sound great that we're in cyber, but it's still, you know, we're all still cooking with water. It's, you know, nothing really special. But it's crazy to see how much threat is really out there. And personally, I'm surprised to see that nothing major has really happened yet. And that's the scary part for me.
Now, right. Now, I'm at your website, and as an MSP, you offer a lot of, you know, a large range of services. But tell me about your multidimensional approach that you take to cybersecurity, and how does it work for you, and why is it so valuable to customers and to your business?
Well, it's a good question. It's a very customer-centric, client-centric approach. You know, our clients are at the heart of everything that we do. We call it our eight dimensions of cyber because on behalf of our clients, we're not just a company that does a little bit of penetration testing. You know, we cover the kind of soup to nuts of cyber. So with that in mind, though, the first dimension is clearly their organization. You know, the company may manufacture widgets. The company over the road to them may manufacture widgets. I can guarantee you those two companies are configured differently. So we get we have a deep dive into the organization and their operating context. And then within that, we also look at their industry. So, for example, if they're a healthcare trust, then clearly they're governed by HIPAA. So, you know, we understand the company specifically. We understand their operational context in their industry. And then we've got, we cover the dimensions of people, process, and technology. A lot of folks think cyber is all about firewalls and appliances and these types of things. Well, for us, it's actually technology last. You know, people are your first line of defense, and I would argue your weakest link. And processes are important too. So we take this kind of holistic people, process, technology view. We bring our culture into play. So if you're on our website, you'll see our culture statement. We're all about accountability and integrity and quality output. Everything that we do, as I say, is checked many times, and it's, you know, accountability, integrity, quality. Collaboration is big for us. We don't work in a silo necessarily. We have an active dialogue with our clients because we find they may think they need one thing when actually on investigation there's normally a wider conversation to be had. So that open dialogue is key. And our culture is all about delivering massive value add to our clients. So wherever we can, we're adding value. Our fifth dimension, so you're on our website, so you can see the breadth of tools and services that we offer. We only partner with companies that where we would use the tools ourselves. We've been doing this a long time. There are a hell of a lot of products on the market, and we've narrowed all of that lot down to about five or six products that we offer. I mentioned we are a cyber company that does everything from assessment through to remediation and forensics. So whatever it is, we've got that covered. We don't just focus on risk. We do assessments and we deliver reports, but we also add the dimension of cost to that. So if there are eight important things that a customer really should remediate, it could well be that items number 2, 3, and 4 are good enough to get the improvements to their security posture that they need. So we are prioritized by risk and cost. And then we have an eye on the future. So, be it blockchain, AI, whatever's coming down the pike, if our clients need to know about that or we feel they should have a point of view, then we absolutely discuss that with them to see what they want to do. So I think you'll agree that's quite a holistic way of thinking. It really does put the customer at the heart of everything that we do. And, our repeat business speaks for itself. I mean, we very rarely do a job and then our customer isn't delighted and doesn't want to re-engage with us.
Okay, excellent. Now, you just mentioned about being very selective in choosing the tools that you use. How do you go about choosing partners and technology for your company?
So that is usually something I kick off just because I'm quite technical. I like to do deep dives in technology. And having been in the consulting industry before and always, even today, I still do client engagement. So I'm down in the weeds with them. I understand their pain points. I've seen small projects being successful. I've seen big projects being successful. And I've also seen the same just absolutely failing because the right tool was not implemented. So we got two different approaches. So one is we are looking forward. Yes, we deliver the standard basic security services and tools just like everybody else. The vanilla cybersecurity assessments, penetration testing, vulnerability scanning. However, technology changes. So we're looking at blockchain, big data security. We're looking at IoT security. So that's where the future is. And that's where we, as a company, also deliver and look forward to get the services and to those new services that are up and coming. So that's one thing. The other thing is also once we identify what the market is, where the market is going, where the needs are and the pain points, then it really also comes down to the tools and technology. And from past experience, we've seen that there's a lot of big companies out there that sell great tools. They can do everything and anything. However, to roll those out, it's expensive, the price tag by itself. The project itself to roll out, to configure it properly, to have the right resources, the SMEs, and then also to be able to have the right staff and use it properly on a day-to-day basis. So you actually get the whole, you can actually use the entire product the way it was intended when it was built. That happens rarely. So our goal is to really find the solutions that may not be the Ferrari out there, but close to a Ferrari, but easy to manage, easy to learn, quickly to deploy, and get our customers what they need within a few days or a couple hours. And that's one of the value that sets us apart, that we can say, you know what, client A, you want something today? This is your pain point? Guess what? In a few days or in a week, you can be up and running with our services and our tools.
Okay. Excellent. Now, I'm interested in two of your main managed services, the dark web and the healthcare. Now, the dark web, we all know that, heisted PII data sets are often, are down on these forums for sale. And the healthcare, we're now dealing with a lot of, telehealth, given the work-from-home stuff. Can you expand a little bit more on what you offer in terms of the dark web and the security for healthcare, please?
The dark web is predominantly for our enterprise and large clients, or the ones that really have sensitive information, for example, research and development, healthcare, or oil and gas, drill information where, or even special events where it's not just about looking or have my passwords been compromised. That honestly is something that we all know. Passwords get compromised. You find any password, any email, you probably find on the dark web. It might be outdated, might be 6 months old, but it's there. So looking for that is a bit of an overkill because you can't find it. But what our clients really look for is, especially when they're starting to negotiate some kind of sensitive deals like merger acquisitions or public tenders or any really critical sensitive information, that's where our clients are looking for us to provide the services and keep monitoring the dark web, as in, is there some kind of chatter going on? Is somebody releasing any confidential information to sabotage a deal? Also, especially for special events, and we've done that in the past as well, is especially if it's in a country and a high visible event in a country and the political situation around it is not the best, our clients look for, is there any kind of chatter? Are we in some kind of a threat? Is somebody trying to do any kind of physical or electronic harm to the venue or to us as a company? And that also applies to brand recognition and brand manipulation. Anonymous, for example, they also have a lot of chatter going on the dark web. So you can, if you keep monitoring that in the right channels, you can really give executives an overview of what potential risks they might be exposed in the future, and also any kind of potential attacks that are being coordinated or any kind of information being released or potential hacks or existing hacks ongoing. That's the stuff that we monitor for in the dark web.
Okay,
and
excellent.
On the healthcare side, I mean, yeah, data privacy is big, but that applies not just to healthcare. For us, I think the biggest healthcare issue that we see with security is the IoT devices. I mean, nowadays you have insulin pumps, you have pacemakers, you have all of those that communicate via, well, IP address or Bluetooth or you name it. And those, there is no really 100% defined security standards for IoT devices. So suddenly you have somebody with a pacemaker walking around and you can get hacked. Well, that has a huge impact on that person's life. And the same thing in a hospital. You've got loads of IoT devices connected to each other. If somebody breaks into the hospital, that can not only just be terrible for the hospital, but that can cost human lives. And that's
there's something else we notice that's quite particular to healthcare as well. And we find that application vendors, you know, when Bill Gates releases a new version of his operating system and one goes out of support, you know, these medical applications are really expensive, and vendors don't just provide an upgrade. They kind of insist, and I'm generalizing wildly, but they kind of insist that the client buys a whole new suite of software to upgrade onto the latest and greatest operating system. So healthcare don't necessarily have the cash to do that, so they don't do that. So we've got, you know, applications running on poorly patched, you know, out of date patches on their infrastructure, which are highly vulnerable. So you know, there are ways to deal with. Also, it seems we've noticed that the kind of gentleman's agreement of hackers not to touch healthcare has kind of expired. We see, and you see in the press now, that there are many more hospitals and healthcare trusts being hacked. I mean, there's no honor amongst hackers anymore. So yeah, they're just a couple of things specific to healthcare.
Okay, excellent. Now, I was wondering, does StealthISS do any work with critical infrastructure, you know, like dealing with SCADA systems, ICS systems, water supply lines, oil, gas? Because as we know, the cyber attacker is not just aiming after digital assets. They're going now after, like, physical assets, too, as well. Have you done any work in those areas?
Sure. Yes, we have. So critical infrastructure, especially at the state level, yes, we work with different states to provide the usually different security assessments, so from physical all the way to electronics to penetration testing.
So we include airports in there.
Yeah, airports as well. So that's kind of ongoing what we do. Oil and gas, yes, we have done several projects where, especially on NERC-SIP requirements, especially when the last version came out, we were doing a lot of consulting to actually bring the company up to the current NERC-SIP standards. Also, we have engaged a few times at the global scale for incident response and forensic investigation after hacks happened. We also have built incident response and forensics teams and offices with the procedures, the tools, and provided training to those. We're definitely there. We also have partnered with a company and providing that as a managed service as well. Is they have a tool to monitor critical infrastructure on the network side with AI, and we provide the services, the actual eyes on the glass, the remediation, and making sure that the clients stay safe rather than just them getting an alert and having to figure it out what's next.
Okay, excellent. Now, how has Stealth ISIS Group grown? What accomplishments do you think you're the most proud of?
Okay, so I guess the thing I'm most proud of is being on the Inc. 500 list 2 years consecutively, 2018-2019. We've grown organically. It's only within the last 18 months or so. We opened the office in Huntsville that I mentioned, and we built a sales and marketing capability. So all of a sudden, we also energized our brand, and so we started, with brand recognition and pushing that a bit harder. Prior to that, it had all been, personal testimonials and word of mouth. So now we have a sales and marketing capability. So we did well on the Inc. list. We were on the Vet 50 list a couple of years too. I don't know if we mentioned, but Dasha is a ex United States Navy veteran, which is really helpful for us on the federal side, because as the federal government looks for set asides, be they economic or socioeconomic or gender or those types of things. So we tick a couple of those boxes. That's really helped us on the federal side. So, as we mentioned, I think our commercial practice is thriving, even more so now that we're doing a hell of a lot more marketing. Federal, now that we have some past performance there, it's always difficult to make a start and get your first bit of past performance, but we lucked into a contract with the US Air Force, which then got us enough kudos to then go win other projects. So we're very busy and we're grateful for that, especially in the current climate. But we do seem to be growing from strength to strength. I'm expecting a couple of very large projects out of federal to land for us to be on a team to be successful in the next 3 to 4 months or so. So, I think we've got a few more step changes in our business to come yet.
Okay, excellent. Now, obviously, there are a lot of other MSPs out there, and why should listeners want to work with the Stealth Group? In other words, what makes you different from the rest of the other 2,000, 3,000 cybersecurity vendors that are located here in the U.S.?
Yeah. So we, without being smug, we do have a chuckle when we see companies all of a sudden use the word cybersecurity in their branding, because clearly it's fashionable and it's, there's revenue to be made. But typically, 9 out of 10 of those companies may offer a little bit of consulting or a bit of penetration testing. They don't offer the breadth of services that we offer. They just don't. I can't think of another company that does. So I think if you wanted a kind of one-stop shop, if you wanted just one throat to choke, let me use an analogy. I had a kitchen built in the US, and I went to the store and they said, yeah, we'll project manage this kitchen build for you. I ended up managing tilers and plumbers and cabinet makers and electricians myself. So I thought, well, I don't want us to be that company. I want, if a client needs something, we will clearly deliver that. And if we need to bring partners in, we will manage those too. So we call it one throat to choke, even from the aspect of it's really easy for their billing department and, there's just one invoice.
So we deal with all of that behind the scenes. I've already covered our eight dimensions. We're all about the customer, and we're all about cybersecurity. We don't do anything else. So, you know, if you want an expert company that does it all and you only want to speak to one person, then come and talk to us.
Okay, excellent. Now let's segue into some of the issues of cybersecurity that are some of the hot button topics. As I, you know, peruse news headlines every evening. Now we've touched on the Internet of Things just a few minutes ago, but to me, I find the Internet of Things to be a very scary proposition. You know, everything's all connected together in both physical and virtual worlds. It just increases the cyber attack surface for the hacker. I don't like so many things being connected. I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy. I still drive a 2003 Honda Accord, all analog instrumentation. What are your thoughts on the IoT, both of you, Dasha and Robert? I mean, do you have smart homes? Do you have smart cars? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, we go to some extent. So smart cars, yeah, unfortunately, yeah, I don't have a 2003 anything. So you're kind of forced into it if you want or not. Now, we have done some car hacking. It is scary, but I see the industry definitely stepping up. They now suddenly have those internal hackers, especially on the car side. So that's good to see. On the IoT itself, am I ever going to buy Alexa and have it in my house? Nope, definitely not.
So can I just ask your listeners, for those that have an Alexa, you know, you have a live microphone connected to the internet listening 100% of the time in your house. Why would you want that? I know it's convenient, but I don't know. I guess it's the business that we're in, but we just don't understand that at all.
Yeah, so, I mean, do we have surveillance cameras? Do we have all of that? Yes. Can you have it? Of course. Is it a risk? Yes. But the biggest thing is always, and this might be a little bit too technical, but it's how you segment it out in your network. So even at home, if you have your Wi-Fi and you have your computers on one VLAN, and then maybe you want to put your IoT devices on the other VLAN, it still has the internet, but it's separated from your kids' computers, from your home computer, from your business computer. So you still have to put some. You will never get rid of the risk, for sure, but you can still put some controls in place that will make it less risky. If you are afraid that somebody will hack into your camera and watch you what you're doing in your living room, then I probably suggest don't get a camera. It's that simple. But do I wear a Fitbit? Yes. Do I know it's trackable online and people can see where I'm doing, what my pattern is? Yes. Those things have been hopefully patched by now. Will it appear at some point? Probably. Do I take the risk? Yes. So I think it's a bit of a risk-based approach, and that's kind of also where we approach to our clients is if you're in a very critical, controlled, top-secret government environment or working on something really sensitive, then your risk with these devices and these technologies is higher, and you probably should not have it. But a small business that sells flowers and takes credit cards, the risk there is a bit different. And you might get away with a lot of those things that bigger companies with DoD contracts will not. And that's also where we consult our clients, and it's not a cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all approach. And that's what makes us different.
Okay, excellent. Now, another issue is artificial intelligence. I know we talked a little bit about that before our show started. That's one of the biggest buzzwords now being bandied about here in cybersecurity. A lot of people think they understand AI, but they really don't. What are your thoughts on AI? Do you actually make use of that in your service offerings, like to automate, you know, like pen test, like to automate processes like pen testing or to kind of like filter through false positives? What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. Now, and I think this, you're right when it comes to misunderstanding what is AI versus what is automation and what looks like AI but is in the back end actually scripting and rules hard-coded into an application. Mm-hmm. Our AI, do we have it? I mean, we as a company, yes, but does AI really exist in the form of what AI is supposed to be, the definition of AI? I personally don't think so. There might be maybe two or three companies that are getting into the AI phases. Everything else that is sold as AI is really hard-coded back-end scripting with some automated learning and capabilities to automate a lot of the features. So if we ever get, I'm sure we will, but when we get to really AI, it's going to be scary because I'm pretty sure machines will at some point outsmart humans. So yeah, that's a bit of a scary thing. Until then, we're really just playing at the very low level on the edges. So I'm not concerned yet. It just makes work a lot easier for us as a company and also for our clients, because a lot of the work is automated, which means it drives the cost of a solution down. And the response time is quicker, which helps the client be more protected, better protected, identify issues quicker than when you do it manually and have to manually actually go through and look through logs. So I welcome it. I'm not so much fond of robots at some point overtaking us.
Okay. Now, the next topic is cybersecurity insurance. Now, being an MSP, have you had clients ask you about cybersecurity insurance policies, or do you help them with that, or do you actually bundle that in any of your other service offerings?
Yes. We've had a couple of clients approach us that were unable to get cybersecurity insurance, so they needed some form of assessment to understand their current risk profile. So we've worked on a couple of those projects. We see that as a growing. Yeah, most companies, what insurance companies are like. They, if you haven't had an assessment, they'll assess you with a risk profile that they think they can get away with. So they'll charge you as much as they can get away with. We provide the insight that allows companies to have a conversation with their insurer to say, hey, look, we've got all of these things, and they can drive their premiums down. So yeah, we've got a couple of clients that we've done that for.
Yeah, and one of the services that we have for our clients is actually that identifies it's basically a data risk, data discovery tool or service that allows clients to identify where do they have the sensitive data, where do they have PII that is not encrypted, credit card, all of that stuff that basically insurance companies look for. It also tells you what is your security posture, how configured are your tools and whatnot. And with that, we are able to give the client a report that shows them here is the amount in dollars that your cybersecurity should have, or how much cybersecurity insurance you need to cover your loss. But at the same time, that helps the client to really identify and clean up their data. And then we run a second report, and then that report can be used to really drive the insurance cost premium down for the client. So they're super happy about it. And it helps them twofold because they don't have to pay so much for insurance and they also get to clean up their data and become compliant. So it's a win-win for all. So
I do have a story on that one. So we were about to meet with the president of a very large casino resort somewhere really, really sunny. And we were just preparing for the meeting. I was actually in one of their bars, not drinking a Coke. It's all good. And, you can, there are apps on your phone that you can use to kind of have a little look around the network and things. So anyway, all of a sudden I'm in the Wi-Fi and then I'm in the camera network. Then I'm on the corporate network. And all of a sudden I've got a login prompt to the finance server of this. And it's a very, very large property. So didn't go any further than that. Didn't break anything. But used that as an example to chat to the president of the organization. And we said, hey, this is what I just did. Cut a long story short, once we'd run the scans and delivered the report, I reminded him of that incident. I said, do you remember that server that I managed to get a login prompt to? He said, yes. So I said, well, look, you can see here the financial value of the data on that server was approximately, I don't know, $400 million or something. So he kind of the blood drained out of his face, and you know, when can you start type of thing. So the tool is exceedingly useful. We don't just use it to find PII, to get a point of view on insurance. We can use the tool to find malware hashes and it searches PDF files. It's rootkits. We've got some real powerful tools, but this particular one is very cheap, and it has multiple uses.
Excellent. Now, as we talked before our show, we talked a little about COVID-19. Now, how has this changed your landscape, both for you as a company and your clients? Now, we're dealing with the remote workforce. This was a concept that nobody thought would take place until they're in 3 or 4 years, but we've seen it actually now happen just a matter of 2 months. There are a lot of issues with Zoom bombing, you know, heist domains, blah, blah, blah. What are your thoughts on all this? On this COVID-19 remote workforce, and just elaborate as much as you can or as much as you want.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start that one, and Dasha can give the technical piece. So yes, initially there was everyone started working from home, and productivity was high. I've seen a couple of reports recently that would lead us to believe that productivity has now dropped, and companies want their folks back in the office. Initially, you know, enterprise or corporate security. You know, companies were asking their folks to use their own laptops and use their own internet, and you know, those devices didn't necessarily have enterprise security products installed. So, you know, the risk profile went up dramatically. As I said, I think there is a gradual drift back to the office now, but we had a lot of folks calling us asking for a point of view on that. So, I'll hand to Dasha now.
It comes down to the basics as well. I'm sure a lot of companies have identified that they did not really plan for a lot of business continuity / disaster recovery. I'm sure a lot of times it can be really quickly. You can set up a laptop. People can access information from home. So probably for a lot of small businesses, it's manageable. Connecting back to the domain controller and to the data storage that they have in the office is probably more of an internet issue and bandwidth that a lot of companies just don't have. The bigger problem I see is then suddenly working or having access to or using your personal device, especially if your employer didn't give you a laptop, where you can still connect to the cloud to access applications and all that, and there's no security or limited security features in place. So suddenly, the same laptop that you do your work from, your five-year-old now play games, or your teenagers do who knows what on it, and that can be a huge problem, or that is a huge problem. So there's a lot of tools that and services that many companies, many CISOs and company owners need to consider to actually put those controls in place. How do you control the password? How do you control antivirus? How do you control data flow and downloading data from a corporate server to bring your own device? And I think that those are the biggest areas that a lot of companies are starting to realize that now they need to protect it. And that's where everybody's reaching out to different companies to see, hey, what kind of service do you have? And then the next thing also becomes, especially if companies like us, they work remotely, or they now decided to go work remotely and stay that way, that suddenly now everything has to move into the cloud. The problem with that is it makes it easy, but the responsibility and the security of the data is still the owner. Owned by the company. It's not the responsibility of the cloud service provider. So we see a lot of requests and a lot of companies coming to us and saying, hey, I just moved everything into the cloud and it's secure there. Well, we're trying to educate them, let them know legally, you're still responsible as a default. The infrastructure where you host your data might be secure, but the asset and the storage and all that, that's still your responsibility. It doesn't matter who owns it. And so that's kind of a little bit of a educating the users or the owners on what the cloud is and where the security comes in.
Okay, excellent. Now, the last hot button issue is, I want to talk about now is data privacy. That's always been one, but I think with the remote workforce, the meshing of home networks, the corporate networks is now causing, you know, private data to be more at risk. And so with that, you know, there are the passages of the GDPR, the CCPA, and the CMMC, as you've talked about before. What are your thoughts on all of this, these legislations? Are they really doing their job? And if you can really give a good, if you can give a good primer on the CMMC, that'd be great, because it's still kind of a very murky area, I think, for a lot of people to understand.
So I think the regulatory changes from GDPR to HIPAA, PCI, everything that is being put in place is great. My biggest concern that I always see is twofold. One, it's non-compliance is not really being enforced, especially on the HIPAA side. Nobody really enforces it. On the PCI side, yes, it is being enforced, but you've got a lot of compensating controls that you can put around and call it a project that I'm working on to buy yourself a year's time, which is not really something that helps from a security and compliance perspective. And then it's not really being enforced. So even the, let's put it this way, to some extent it is being enforced. Big companies pay huge fines, but it's not this. Either you comply and you continue your business, or you don't comply and you don't do your business. So that's one thing. The other thing is also a lot of companies still see regulatory compliance and cyber as a cost. So therefore, they see all these regulatory compliances, annual audits that they have as a, okay, let's pass this audit, let's get our certificate, and 5 minutes later, let's forget about it, because that's really what they want to do. And compliance is not security.
So Ravi, another thing, a couple of times a month, we offer up a free webinar with no sales pitch. The title of the series is Being Compliant Doesn't Make You Secure. So going back to some of the extra value that we add, you know, say, for example, we were engaged to perform a PCI assessment. Well, I mean, that's, you know, pretty much focused on the car processing environment. We go the extra mile and we add, you know, the relevant parts of ISO 27000 or NIST or whatever that might be for that organization. And then we give them a much more rounded and holistic view of their security posture. So as I say, governance, we think it's a great thing. Certainly with CMMC, but that's actually going to be a lot tougher for companies than they realize right now, and Dasha will get into some detail on that. But I'd just like to reiterate, being compliant doesn't make you secure.
Sure. Okay, never thought
So on the CMMC side, the good thing from a security and risk perspective, and probably not such a good thing for the companies, is CMMC does not see it as, yeah, if you don't pass something, you can put a compensating control in place, or you can put a project plan together to show us that in 6 months or 12 months you will have it complete. That's a good thing, because it's not. It's either black or white. If you even miss one simple thing in the entire assessment, you fail. So there's no gray zone. It's simple, straightforward. And the good thing also here is they are no longer allowing to do self-assessments. As you know, 871, the compliance for that was December 2017. It was a self-assessment. Well, based on the stats on how many third parties were breached and how much data got exfiltrated and all that, apparently it didn't help much. So getting third parties in to assess companies properly is great. Now, last week I've gone through the official CMMC provisional assessment training. As a company, we are also being evaluated to become a C3PAO to do the assessments. It was great to see in the training how much emphasis they put into the methodology of how the assessments need to be done. The double controls by two different entities to actually validate the work by the assessor before the company gets their certificate. So there is the separation of duties. There is a strict adherence to not having a conflict of interest between as a company or as a consultant providing consultancy services and then assessing your own piece of work. So none of that is going to fly. So is CMMC a complete new thing? Not so much. It's really based on NIST 800-171 with 20 new controls in there. So companies should not be so concerned about this, especially if they have done their due diligence on 171. But the fact that there's no black and white, the fact that the methodology, the assessors, and the quality of work that will need to be performed, that is that will change how companies address compliance and security. And the good thing with CMMC is, and I wish other like PCI or HIPAA would start putting that in place as well, it's not just a audit where you hit the check boxes and say, yep, I passed everything, I showed all evidence, it's all good, a maturity model. So you have to actually show that not just are you, do you have the policies and the tools, but you also have to show that you are performing it throughout the whole year, that it's part of your day-to-day business. So a good example is in many audits, the auditor says, well, hey, company A, you're missing this policy or this procedure, and the company writes up a document, gives it to the assessor, and the assessor is happy. That's not going to work with CMMC. You actually have to prove that the policies, procedures, all those operational things are in place and not just have been put in place a couple of days, weeks, or a few months before the assessment. They have to be baked in. And I think that's going to call a lot of companies out and if they haven't done so far. So that's going to be a big change.
Thank you for that insight. That's really powerful. Thank you. Now, finally, as we wrap up our show now, you know, we were talking about Christmas or coming to the end of the year. Yeah, we are going to be approaching the Q4 pretty soon here and be starting 2021. In that regard, what do you think the cybersecurity threat landscape will be like, and what do you think the biggest threat will be? Now, I mean, anybody can say COVID-19, this, that, but barring COVID-19, what do you think is going to change, and what will that biggest threat variant be, in your own opinion?
So, you know, the old favorites, I think, will continue to be there around phishing and just folks clicking the wrong links. That's, you know, people are your first line of defense and also potentially your weakest link. So, you know, that's not going to go away. I think as for anything earth-shatteringly new, that's a really good question, Dasha.
I think it's going to go to, and it pretty much already started, and we've been involved in a couple projects with some clients, or with some states, actually nations, where control of information, manipulation of data, identifying what people are doing, where the tendencies are, how people are thinking to then drive markets or drive certain government decisions, that's already happening. You, to some extent, you probably see it already here with the election coming up, is since a lot of stuff can be automated, you can see, especially on Facebook, people commenting something. Honestly, there was a study just recently that a lot of the negative voices or the starting a virtual fight on Facebook is not so much done by people. It's actually done by scripts, by AIs, by tools that are trying to, in some way, shape, or form, influence society in one or the other direction. That can be done from anywhere in the world. So the interconnectivity will play a big role. So I think that that will change, not just from a political, but also from a market perspective and buying perspective, and we're already there, the influences on how what technology has on us personally, how we make decisions, what we buy and where we go and where we go on vacation. That I think will be stronger. I don't see so much on a privacy just yet. And the biggest concern that I see, I always used to say security is a must. It's not when, it's not if you're going to get hacked, it's when. I see it at this point coming down to the next level or up the next level to critical infrastructure, our energy, our transportation systems, our critical grid, financial systems, ATMs. I mean, you can really cripple an entire company, an entire nation by just stopping the economy, by just, you know, changing or hacking stock exchange or hacking a big bank and not allowing access to ATM machines. Stuff like that, that really, even if it's just for a few hours, can have a huge impact on the country.
Yeah, I think the current, just to add to that, I think the current spat with China, I think there's going to be a more nation-state activity in all directions. I think that's you'll see more of that in the press. It's clearly happening already, but I think that will be reported more widely.
Okay. Excellent. Now, we all are at risk of becoming a victim of a cyber attack. You know, nobody's really immune. But what do you tell clients, friends, family members? How to mitigate that risk of becoming a victim? Is there like a laundry list you tell people, like, oh, you need a better password, this, that? What do you normally tell people?
Yeah, just basic hygiene. I mean, turn your Alexa off. That's just a pet peeve of mine, but I know it's about ultra convenient, so folks like those things. But yeah, it's just around password hygiene. I know it's a pain, but we highly recommend secure and encrypted password lockers, if you like. Just to keep a track of all your passwords and use the very difficult to hack, you know, randomly generated passwords as well. Don't put your pet's name and the year that you were born because that's not going to get you anywhere. So, yeah, it's all the stuff that you see in the press. Dasha mentioned if they wanted to take it one stage further, there is a way to kind of firewall off your kind of the IoT convenient devices around your homes and things like that. So, it really depends how far you want to go with it, but certainly change your passwords. Don't click on links that might look suspicious. There are some telltale signs from padlocks through to look at the actual URL that's sending this to you. Has it really originated from your bank? Just basic people, you know, people awareness. Dasha, anything to add on to that?
No, I think that's it. I just, the biggest risk I see is that we as individuals, our majority of us probably just think, you know what, I can't be bothered. I'm just nobody in the big scheme of things. But the hackers will not go after the big companies, after the big infrastructure. They're going to go after us, the small businesses, the small people that have the computers and are easily accessible. They will use our computers to get into the next level, to get after the small business that is connected to the big defense contractor who then manages the critical infrastructure.
So third party risk, isn't it?
Third party, yes. And each one of us has a role to play here. And just because if your credit card gets stolen, you just call your bank and say, well, that purchase wasn't mine, and that's it, the problem is not that it was stolen. The problem is you as the individual has to make sure you know where you use it, how it's used, and you understand that you play a critical role in it, we as individuals.
So we did notice a change in behavior. So it would have been about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, if your bank was hacked, you would immediately close your accounts and you'd go rushing off to another bank and you do all those things. Now your bank gets hacked, you think, well, if I go to another bank, they're just going to get hacked anyway, so I won't bother. We've noticed apathy creeping in, and that just for us is a recipe for disaster. So it is about being bothered. It is about just basic hygiene. As Dasha mentioned, slightly wider than that, hackers are looking for the weakest link in the supply chain.
which is, you know, one of the main reasons why CMMC has been developed. So, you know, the DoD was sick of their secrets disappearing via, you know, via a third-party connection into a major contractor. So, bear in mind with CMMC that your third-party connections are also in scope.
Excellent. Now, finally, how should someone get a hold of you? What's your email address, phone number, or should you just go to your website, fill out your contact form?
Yeah. I mean, website is very easy and convenient to use. So it's stealth-iss.com. There are various ways to get in touch with us on there. If you'd like to get hold of Dasha and myself, you could try us at info@stealth-iss.com.
We're also on social media, Facebook. We've got a Twitter account. We've got LinkedIn.
Yeah.
We share webinars. We share our latest information. So just follow us. Come and visit us online.
Yeah.
Join the group. And we always share knowledge and information with everyone.
Yeah, truly.
Okay. Well, Robert and Dasha, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it. And I think you've shed some new insights into some existing issues, which I never even thought of before. Thank you so much. We'd love to have you again on a future podcast.
Ravi, you're very welcome. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And everyone, stay safe.
You too. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.